Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
All right, everyone. This has been a long time coming. I've got my friend Charles Flanagan here. Charles is a celebrity personal trainer as well as male model. And he looks the part, man. I'm never ashamed. My wife and I will always compliment. Like, my wife will be the first one to be like, damn, that girl is hot. She's good looking. I'm like, yeah, she is. She'll be like, no, you can't say that. But I showed her. I'm like, hey, this guy's coming in. We've been chatting back and forth for a long time. She's like, damn. And I don't ever get a damn. You know? Maybe she just doesn't want to build me up.
That's the way women work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the way women work.
She wants you to earn it. She's all about, she's like, date your wife. When I'm getting out of shape, she's just like, hey, I love you either way, but like, work out as if you're still trying to court me.
Man, you know what? I love that. I got to meet her. I wish everybody did that. You know, a lot of times we get complacent once we get in the relationship. I got you, and now it's all done. But you have to. You have to work out like, you know, you're just now dating. I love that.
Like you're single. And she, you know, she jokes. She's like, I got broken, Mike. Because when I started dating her, I was still hitting the gym hard. I was looking really good. I mean, I was doing the Men's Journal photo shoots. And then the hip replacement, and then like just things started to get out of whack. But I'm getting back there. I've done the stem cell in Mexico, probably going back for another round. But dude, she is that woman. And I'm going to brag on my wife. I always do. One, she's my best counsel. Even when she says the things I don't want to hear.
Yep.
Is up at 5, out of the house by 5:45, and just hits it hard. And she is the best she's ever looked. And the funny thing is, if you go back and look at her high school and college pictures, completely different woman.
Really?
Completely.
Women get better with age, though. Seriously. As they mature, women get better with age.
So can men.
Yeah. It's different. You know, you have the whole thing going out now where, you know, you talk about the older, hotter woman. You know, I don't even know if you saw the comparison. They did a picture of J-Lo and then the young lady from Golden Girls. Right. And they're the same age. But it's so different now how women are perceived versus how they were, say, 2 decades ago. You know, it's a woman in her 40s and 50s is perceived as, you know, gorgeous, as a better adjective I can use, but sophisticated. You know, you hear all these things now with the what's his name? The guy who just got in trouble on. What is it?
What show?
No, not show. He's got the big trial.
Trump?
No, that's the good guy. The other crazy guy, Epstein. So you start thinking about all these older gentlemen and all that. You get the connotation of the dirty old man. Yeah. So that's why I'm saying there's a different kind of separation. But no, I love older women are where it's at right now.
Well, I think there's an argument to be made here that more women are getting into weight training.
Yes, and I love that.
There is nothing like a woman with muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And dude, watch my wife like deadlift like 250 in the gym.
Yeah.
Or throw up like 145 or 165 on
chest. Yes. Bro.
So, and what's even more impressive is she's on Chronometer. I don't know what you use, MyFitnessPal, or if you use any of those.
MyFitPal.
Literally down to the gram. Literally, if she throws balsamic, it's in there in Chronometer. She tracks everything down to the gram. And all her meals are prepped. And she's a little worried right now because we found out she's pregnant. And you know, she's elated. She's wanted this. We've been trying. I was the long pole in the tent for a while. Yeah. I had to see a fertility doctor, and I'm not ashamed. Been through some things. Mm-hmm. My endocrine system with war, which is pretty common amongst my genre of guys. But she's elated. But then it hit her. She's like, oh God, my body's going to change.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm willing to do that. And she's like, I will be back to where I'm at now, 6 months after birth.
She'll be even better.
Yeah.
She'll be better.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Congratulations, man. Dude, thank you guys both. That is thank so you. Awesome.
And I couldn't think of a better host to bear a child.
Oh, man. Thank you.
So, Charles, let's dive into your background. And I know this conversation is going to go so many which ways. I got to say something. The one thing my wife and I don't see eye to eye is TV shows. She's a Bravo TV.
Yeah.
And I know you work in the celebrity arena. Mm-hmm. And she's like, we just got to watch this. Couple to Thruple. Have you heard of this?
No.
So married couples go on this show where they introduce, like, there's four couples and they introduce 16 singles. And then each of the couples introduce or select somebody to bring into their relationship. It's basically, was it polygamy? I believe is the correct word.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm watching this and I'm like, this is such crap, Thruple. And I'm like, you will never live that down. I know a lot of people go on these shows to gain a following. There's another show she watches during the summer. It's on like every night, like Summer in Paradise or something like that.
That was the one that I was just thinking of. That is wild, isn't it?
And we all know people are going on there to get a following because they want to get paid and be in that scene. But to always have that stigma on you, if somebody's a polygamist, I believe in adult freedom. You do your thing.
Right.
That's something you don't necessarily want to advertise at all. No. Or to me.
Like, no. You know, think about it. I think the concern that I always have when people do these things for social gain is, what are you going to do outside that scope? That's only one aspect of your life, you know? So you're going up there, you're creating this persona, but what are you going to do in everyday life? Like, right, you got to take it off. Even my shirt kind of talks about it. You guys were raised on IG. I was raised by OGs. I think, you know, so often I think that the consummate struggle is like people don't realize that that's not real. You know, even a lot of things that I do, I'm very big on curating the image that I have, because what happened with me and you say modeling the celebrity thing is that right now with all this access that we have, people are always, nobody trusts what you say. Everybody's always trying to search out. So with all these, you know, social media sites, people are always trying to look and find out. So people would Google my name, you know, and I had to make sure. And at the time I was young, I didn't know. I was very secretive, but it never led to my benefit. So now I make sure that everything that I put out, I'm very, very vocal. I'm very, very transparent. But I put out things so people don't try to look. The inquisitive nature of humans makes us find things. And then when we find things, if they don't fit our interpretation, we try to, you know, expand on that and make it our own. You know, who you are and who people see is it's not who you are. It's who they interpret you to be. You know, so with social media, that interpretation has to be whatever you want it to be, your best self. You know, so what you see on IG, it's not a hide, or my pages, that they are who I am. You know what I mean? So I try to be very transparent and true with that.
There, to a degree, you've got to control your narrative.
100%.
By what you put out.
Yes.
And it's got to mirror with what reality is. And it sounds like, hey, what you see is who I am.
Right.
But that's not often the case. You know what drives me crazy is, one, I agree with you. Everyone has a microphone these days. Amen. And everyone's, you know, ultimately, we had a phrase, it's doing greater sign talking. And it's about credibility. And there are some guys out there, and God bless them, they do have a crowd that are so me, and I'm so great, and this is what I do. And like the pictures on private jets, when you know they can't afford private jets, with their laptop open, you know, looking out into the distance with their, what I put out on social, and I'll be honest, I don't really handle my socials. My team does. It is business centric, and I very rarely show my wife or my kids. Mm-hmm. It just, you said you were secretive, I think private. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very private about that side of my life. It's just, I want to keep that segregated from my businesses.
To a large degree, you have to. I call it the superhero complex. And why I say that is, you know, we had Batman, we had Superman, and one of the biggest things is that they fought for good, right? They tried to do all that, but they always kept their family and everything out of that, right? So the minute something went awry, what did the enemy do? The bad guys.
The family.
100%. So, like, how do you protect yourself from that? You know what I mean? And that to me is part of that curation. So, my lady, I'm always very awry with what you put out there. You know what I mean? And you have to fade the line. You can't put nothing out there because people are like, well, is he not proud of who he's with? You know? So it is, you know, to going back to your point about these people that want to fabricate and put more on life that is, you know, if you're drawn to that kind of person putting out just material, you know, possession, like, I guess you have to really ask yourself, what are you looking for? You know what I mean? And if you're, you know, trainer or a person that's all you're putting out, I don't know. You know, like, I think, you know, with me, I never wanted to look back, or I never wanted anybody, you know, when I wasn't on IG or when I wasn't on social, to look at me and say, man, you know, that none of that's real. Like, you know, I met him and none of that was real, you know? So
he was real dick.
Yeah, right?
He was a real asshole.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. People often have a hard time because they're like, you're so humble. You're nothing like I thought. You're nothing like I thought you would be. You know, so, you know, again, that to me is everything. Being real. Like, what is it that talk less, do more?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, words are cheap. Actions is priceless.
Well, as an operator and in the service, what do you think about that? I see a lot of that in your field. I see a lot of, you know, ex-operators, you know, very, very vocal about the things that they did. And it's great, you know, it gives you an audience. But what do you think about that? And I've heard you talk about that in several occasions without, you know, bashing.
Yeah, I don't want to denigrate anyone. And I've tried to, like, there's no way of getting around, like, oh, yeah, that's Mike, the retired Navy SEAL. I'm like, yeah, that's what I used to do.
Right.
And it's still part of my DNA. I'm very proud of the team I served with, in that I was part of a winning team and surrounded by just guys who I don't want to say are my heroes, but I put them up on a pedestal.
Yes, sir.
But here's what I'll summarize it. The guys who did the most, the public will never know about.
Right.
And the guys who did little, but maybe were part of some, you know, particular operation and are the loudest, usually did the least. And you've got to be careful of, I've actually moved the opposite direction. Usually what you'll see is people, you know, the fish was this big,
yeah.
And I'm using a Texan voice there for a reason, where then they start to, like, the stories become more grandiose every time you hear it. Well, I killed 15 guys. Next time you see him, it's, I killed 30 guys. I'm like, first off, who freaking cares how many people you killed? Mm-hmm. We, at the end of the day, not, you know, our soldiers won every battle, but we lost the wars.
Yeah.
We 100% in lions led by dogs. I was just on a panel last night. The strategies were just so flawed. But anyone who killed or counted kills in my book, I don't hold in the highest regard. And it also shows me that there's a unwillingness or maybe a inability to move on from what they used to do. Mm. Now, do I go back for lessons that I learned in the military? Absolutely, because I had amazing coaches and mentors, and that is knowledge transfer. Saying, hey, I served for this guy, Chris Fussell, who helped pen the book, Team of Teams, and wrote the book, One Mission. Mm. And I talk about the things he did. And whenever I speak to companies, it's always about what I saw other people did. Occasionally, I'll say, yeah, hey, I did this one thing well. But trust me, I did so many things poorly. Let me talk about the things I did poorly so that you don't replicate those behaviors.
Absolutely.
But it's interesting, and it gets very... Dude, the special operations community is almost like a sorority.
okay.
There's a lot of politicking. There's a lot of drama. Mm-hmm. Guys don't necessarily like each other. They loved each other. That's my brother. And even though I dislike him, or maybe the better word is not necessarily like him, if he's wounded on the battlefield, I'm going to run out there and I'm going to get him.
Right.
That wasn't in question. It's, and I just try to refrain from getting into that world. And there's guys that will live there, and that's fine, man. And if they're doing well for their families, I can't fault them for that as well. But I do want to get into, so you were born in Southern California.
Yes, sir.
Where in Southern California?
Anaheim.
Anaheim.
Yeah.
Okay.
OC. Yeah.
But you lived there until what age?
I was there until I was 10. So very, not a lot, a long time, but till 10. And then moved to the Pacific Northwest. So from Cali, it was an immersion of cultures, you know. From the time I was 10, until I moved to Washington, I spoke Tagalog, a little bit of traditional traditional Chinese, or what would it be, Mandarin, Spanish, very fluent, and obviously English and whatever. I moved to Seattle or Kirkland at the time, and there was no diversity at all. Like, I didn't see another black face until, say that was third grade, until about eighth grade. So another 5 years into one of my other classes. So no diversity. But, you know, I applaud my dad for the effort and what he was doing. At the time, I had friends die. The gang community in California was very big. The area that I was in, overdoses and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things that I was involved with that weren't lending, you know, that weren't lending to me going in a good direction. So my dad, being the father that he was like, you know, men need their father. So he moved my brother and I out to Washington. The area that we lived in, Kirkland, is super affluent. The very first Costco, Microsoft, lots of industries of you know, success are out there. It was great. It was a great place to grow up, but it didn't come without hardships. I would liken myself to the black Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. You know, being in these great areas gave me so much an understanding of just, you know, life, economics, socioeconomics, you know, and all that. You know, some of the things that I want to aspire to do. But the difference was is that those people who had them, they had also the lessons behind them. I didn't have those, some of those lessons. And I think that Ken Rideout talks about that in his story. So it was great. You know, like I was exposed to, but I still didn't know how to get those things. So, that was me in Washington. And I went to college, Washington State. I went to JUCO. I went to Spokane Community. And again, this is, you know, not having the mentorship, good looking guy, very successful, good athlete, very poor discipline. And I was arrogant to the nth degree because I was, you know, a good looking guy. I was so much faster than everybody. So a lot of that I thought came, you know, without some of the other, you know, parts that you have to do. So anyways, I had a very good freshman year. I went back home, you know, for a party with a bunch of my friends. It was a frat party. I didn't drink at the time. After the party, I got driven home. Long story short, I ended up getting a really bad car accident. That car accident cost me my scholarship that I earned to Washington State. Okay. The way it happened was they thought that I wasn't gonna be able to walk, or they thought that I might die. The actual news report after the accident said that I died. So that was a lot. You know, you have survivor's guilt because there was an accident at the same time where they did die. So there's so much behind that. That's a story for another time. But I was torn. Everything that I knew was in athletics. Everything that I thought, I was going to be this, you know, Olympic athlete, this professional athlete. So what do I do then? You know what I mean? So I ended up getting into the car business. I ended up becoming a detailer. And I saw these guys, you know, making tons of money by selling cars. And I talked to these guys. I'm like, yo, what are you guys doing? You know, how do you do this? Like, what kind of degrees do you have? And at the time, it was a Saturn store that I worked at. And Saturn was rocking. I don't know if you remember, about the same age.
Oh, yeah.
Polymer panels, all that kind of stuff, plastic cars. But the line on it was good. It was a great, gib for that respect. It was the car that didn't ding or didn't rust or anything like that. So for Seattle, being the very kooky, kind of eccentric place that it is, it was great. They also had a different model than most. They had one price. So it wasn't the whole negotiation. It was building value, and the price is what it is. So for a customer, that's also a good thing. So I learned in a great way, and I ended up selling cars and making a ton of money. But, you know, demographically, I didn't want to stay in Seattle. Like, before I left in, 98, it was 120 days of straight rain. 120 days of straight rain. And it was rough. Washington is number one for SAD, seasonal affective disorder. It's number one. And I was feeling like I was about close to my deadline. So my mom lived in Arizona, and we were kind of estranged. We didn't really talk again. I'm kind of jumping. But she was in Arizona, and I went and visited her, and I was hooked, man. I was like, let me just move to AZ, and I started up the career there. So
Arizona's great.
Yeah, I love AZ, man. I'm not big for weather. I don't like any kind of weather condition. And again, this is not going to be the best thing. Most people aren't going to like this. But I would rather take 102 versus 32 any day of the week. I'm big on heat, dry heat, whatever. I'm just not built for that. I don't do weather.
The Northwest can be brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I won't lie. I'm trying to convince my wife to move to Utah, and I think she's into it.
Provo is beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Utah is a great state. I think she likes Heber Valley, which is outside of Park City.
Yep. Yep.
But it'll probably be 3 to 4 years when interest rates, we got a great interest rate. It just doesn't make sense right now. We'll wait for the economy to recover. God bless. Sooner rather than later, man.
Please.
Sooner rather than later. So you're selling cars. Mm-hmm. You're doing well. Where did the leap from that profession into which, dude, I admire the physical fitness industry. Like, if you can make it work for you and still put food on the table, there's no better hobby.
Yeah.
Because you're doubling down on your health.
Yep.
But, so were you still working out like a savage?
Yeah. No, you know, I'm sorry for the omission. So at the time I'm in the car business, I'm still modeling. I'm a signed model at that time. I've been assigned an agency represented model since I was 5, right? So I've been with Sports Unlimited. Damn. I've been with Wilhelmina Sport. I've been with Ford. There's a couple, why I like Utah is because the agency in Utah, they're called Urban Talent. They're looking at signing me now. So as far as representation, and this is before IG, you know, you didn't have IG or Facebook. Mm-hmm. You had to have model representation. You didn't have media platforms to disseminate who you were or your Zed card. So you had them that kind of source everything out. So I'm working in the car business. And at that time, now I'm in Arizona. So I can't go back to those castings. Castings represent like a job interview for models. Yes. You know what I mean? So I couldn't go to any of those. So I'm just grinding away. And whenever there was a casting that fit my profile, they would call me. So there was times in that where I would be cracking it, making tons of money, and then fly out to New York. There was times that I'd be cracking it, go out to LA, you know, for the weekend. And it was kind of like my little secret identity, you know. But again, you know, there's so much excess. I wasn't sleeping. I was, you know, like a kid partying. I'd fly to LA, drink, you know, pills, whatever, come back, you know, work all weekend. Like, and I mean that, like, so from 7 to 11 at night, you know, I probably had one day off a week, you know. But the problem is that whole thing is not sustainable. I was so burnt, you know, so I would do shoots and, you know, right before the shoot, I'd be drinking just so I can kind of taper off from everything else that I'd done throughout the week, you know, just to level myself out, you know, so people see these amazing, these iconic images. Like, I had billboards in New York, but I was so just out of my mind.
Bereft.
Yeah, bereft. And, you know, the thing that I like that Ken said, and I think that, you know, a lot of the great men that I admire, yourself included, is we're all so fearful of this imposter syndrome. You know what I mean? Like, what if I'm not good enough? What if, why am I here? You know what I mean? So it was always what kind of kept that perpetual cycle was me not believing a lot in myself. You know what I mean? So.
Isn't that funny? And with, you know, comparison is the thief of joy, but with Instagram, people see these people that the appearances, they're highly successful. And usually those people are hurting the most.
Oh, man. So I suffer from anxiety and depression.
That's why you're taking pills to take the edge off?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So at that point, you know, a lot of these mental health dis-ease wasn't really diagnosable and it wasn't really talked about. My dad has had depression, but at the time, you know, they don't call it that. Yeah, man, I get in moods and you just get over that crap, you know, for lack of better words. And once I started getting therapy, I started going through and I started realizing that what my dad was doing is he was suffering from it. You know, but again, it's not diagnosable. At that time, my dad would just, you know, I'd see my dad self-medicate, you know, he'd drink and whatever, you know, shut himself in, you know, in the house for a week, you know, wouldn't be, you know, expressive or whatever. And I started doing those same things and I didn't realize what that behavior was, you know, was from, you know. I would do incredibly well. I would be number one on the board. I was at one point the number one finance director for Infinity in the U.S. I had people come from the corporate office to come and look at me because they're like, there's no way this guy is putting out these numbers like without kind of some kind of fraud, right? There's no way. So
you got audited basically.
100%. From, Infinity. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that stressed me. So that made me drink even more, you know, because it was like, oh my gosh, they think that I'm so good. Like, how am I going to keep this up? How am I going to keep this up? So the sustainability of performing is also a driver, you know, to some of those, you know, addictions, you know, like I can't keep this up, you know, I can't.
You know, in the book, and I know you read the book, it was to talk about we're all in the pursuit of balance.
Yeah.
Which is a total mirage.
Yep.
There's no one is ever 100% balanced. It's how close can I get
right
to a manageable, sustainable lifestyle. Mm-hmm. High performers, and I remember it was Terrell Owens. When I asked him, how did you stay balanced while you were playing in the NFL? And he's like, it's almost like, Irving? Who's like, practice?
Yeah.
We're talking about practice? Right. He's like, balance. And he just gave me this, like, are you freaking kidding me? Look, like, balance? When you're in the pursuit of greatness, there is no fucking balance.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's 100% right. And we talked about this before we started recording. Everything I've done that was like truly a lofty mission or goal totally threw me out of balance.
Yeah.
Like, and usually health is the first to go.
Right.
For me. Clearly not for you, dude.
So why I said the byproduct. So the depression, the anxiety, I'm always so worried about everything. I'm all, even this. So this whole week leading up to this, you and I have gone back and forth. I've vetted you. I've read every book. I've, you know, every podcast. So just that alone caused me a tremendous amount of stress. My workout schedule these last 3 weeks has been, I wake up 3:30. I do an hour of cardio. I do my ISOs, isokinetic, to all this stuff with the vest that I got you and your missus.
You're going to talk about this. This thing is awesome.
I love it. And then I'll come back home. I'll start my work day, you know, which will be from, so that's my hour, 3:30, 4. So now we're at 5. 5, I'll, you know, start going through my online routine, start going on my work, handling my clients. I do that till about 11.
How many clients?
I have 7. But I also do executive recruiting. I recruit for the cannabis space, CPG, fintech. Yeah. So not like you, not as high as you, but I'm in executive search as well. That's part of the new venture that we talked about. And we said that, what was the terminology that you used where you understand everything that it falls out of line? We just talked about that. We start to get everything, you know it, and then you...
The Dunning-Kruger effect.
That's where I'm at because I was recruiting in real estate and I was a rock star. Now I'm back in CPG, fintech, you know, private equity. I'm so outside my scope.
Yeah, it's iterative though. With each search, you'll pick it up like a pro, and you'll get humming. And it everything is time.
You know what? Right now, there's a lot of humility because my boss and my mentor, who's awesome, and what you said, I completely agree to. I think one of the biggest things that a lot of men, you know, lose sight of or they miss is having a mentor. Like it's, if you don't have one, if anybody hears, if you do not have a mentor and you're struggling or looking or striving for direction, find a mentor. You know, one of the attributes I look for in a mentor is somebody who has or has accomplished the things that I want to accomplish. Make sure they're not a pushover. Make sure you're a little intimidated, right? Because like any great mentor, there's going to be times that you falter and you need to be held accountable. Somebody who doesn't intimidate you, who's a pushover, is not going to do that, you know? You also have to have, that person has to have a fair degree of humility and compassion because there's times when you're going to fall off and you're not going to know, you know, like, so how about this? Really struggling a lot with the relationship I have with my kid, right? I was the girl dad before Colby. And for whatever reason, you know, my daughter and I haven't talked in the last 5 years, you know what I mean? So it's really thrown me off because earlier, my whole identity was encompassed in me being this girl dad and everybody knowing this cool girl dad and this dynamic. So after I lost that, I had to, you know, refine myself. So, you know, my mentor, it was one of the months I was struggling because her birthday is in December. My birthday is in January. All these things that I'm, you know, associating with my kid and this dad and people are like, and I just couldn't, I couldn't work. I couldn't function. I couldn't concentrate. So he's sensing it, but not knowing what it is. Maybe this guy's not wanting to work. Maybe this guy doesn't like me. And so one of the things as men we do is we hide that. We're not vocal about our emotions, especially not in the workplace, because there's a time and a place, right? We're taught. So he's getting that. We finally had a meeting and he's like, hey, talk to me. You know, what's going on? And I was like, you know, things are good. He's like, no, they're not good. You know, and he kept on poking and prying. And then I told him, he said, Charles, I get that. You know, that I can't even imagine, you know, and he held space. He said, if you don't want to, you know, just we can just sit here. You know, you just allow me just to be me. There was that same week and he knew my birthday was coming up. And I was so stressed. You know, he's like, hey, I'm coming over. We're going on a hike. So we went on this huge, we went on this long, arduous hike. And, you know, you're out in nature, and I think Joe says it as well, and, you know, a lot of you guys say it as well. You see the enormity of what you know, was out there, nature and all this beauty, and it puts you at ease, you know. But again, a very acute, very great mentor that he is was able to see that, you know. So, you know, I gave him a big shout out on LinkedIn. I said, Hefe, I can't tell you, you know, and we use that adage, you know, by William Worth. It's like, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. You know, so with him, you know, for all the accolades that he has, he was a sales director. He started at Michael's, Hallmark. He was a badass. But I love that guy because he, I feel like he cares so much about me. You know what I mean? I will run through a wall for a dude. You know what I mean? So that was a tangent, but you know, what it looks like for trying to find a good mentor is important.
Anyone who's achieved anything great is a product of their coaches and mentors in life.
Yes, sir.
And sometimes, you know, especially it's almost like leadership through readership. Mm. I mean, there are books I've read about historical figures who are no longer on this earth. Teddy Roosevelt. I'm a huge Teddy Roosevelt fan. But I've learned from him, reading the books. And yes, it's someone else's interpretation on his life, but some things we know to be true just based on historical chronicles. But it's the same thing. You know, one of the positives about Instagram or LinkedIn or podcasts is you can listen to Joe Rogan, and you're not going to get access to Joe Rogan. 99.9% of the people that listen to Joe Rogan are not going to get access to him. But him simply putting out information may benefit them in a way that a mentor would. And it's almost like he's putting out that content of, hey, this is between you and I.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, he's phenomenal. But I am going to say thank you for sharing this situation with your daughter. I think one of the reasons I didn't push the book, The Everyday Warrior, even though it did hit number 84 of all books, is because it ended up in the number one in the category of fatherhood on Amazon. And, you know, it's probably time for me to set the record straight here. I've got a beautiful 20-year-old. Well, she's about to turn 20, March 13th, and I have a beautiful son who's about to turn 16 on February 28th this month. And there's a lot of baggage there. Some out of my control, other things within my control, but a lot of parental alienation on the other side. And they live in Virginia Beach, and they were supposed to move to Texas, and I don't want to get into it. But my wife now sees and knows that there is just this guilt that I have not been in their lives more. And some of that is by design on the other side. I've been denied. I mean, I took my wife out to meet the kids three times to Virginia Beach. We flew out there three times. And she sat in the hotel room waiting for my text to, you know, meet at a location to meet the kids. And the other side wouldn't let it. My kids were not at my wedding. And I'm trying, you know, I maintain contact with them and through text and an occasional phone call, basically when they need stuff. And that's fine. That's the nature of kids. Hey, I need money. I get it. Hey, could you call me just when you don't need money? Mm-hmm. Tell me when you're struggling with something. And my son and I are connecting through physical fitness. So now he's like, I want to lift. I'm like, great. There's no better hobby, not hobby or passion that you can carry throughout your life, like lifting weights. And of course, I'm like, hey, do it smart. It's one step at a time. Right. Don't look at what other people are lifting. Make sure you're lifting with proper form, you know, so that you maintain your shoulder joints, your knees, your hips.
Yes.
But he's, and a part of it is I know with time, they'll wise up to certain aspects of why I haven't been in their lives.
Right.
But, you know, I talked to Dave Bautista, and Will was with me. We went out to Tampa, and he hasn't talked to his daughter or daughters. He hasn't talked to, I think, his daughters in like 5 years. And I know how difficult that is, and it weighs on your soul because you'll be doing something that brings you happiness, and all of a sudden, and I don't know if this is the same for you, you're like, damn, my kids aren't here to share this with me,
yeah,
to bask in this one moment of joy. And it's the same, too, for the guys we lost. You know, it dampens any happiness that comes into my life. I'm like, damn, I'm here. I get to do this. And their families are still hurting from the loss of their loved ones. So I'm with you there, man. And I'm hoping they come back into my life or choose to be in my life more, because I definitely want to be in theirs. And that's hard for a man to take. And you know, we were at a retreat. We did the Rhythmia plant-based medicine. Recently, one of the, after it's like 2 a.m, they go around and share the room, and Will knows the story. Some woman just in, it's supposed to be about you, what you discovered about yourself. And she just went off on toxic masculinity and you white powerful men in this room, you're killing the earth and capitalism. And I was standing next to a guy named Shep Rose, and I'm like, where the fuck is she going with this?
Facts, man.
And all the guys left. And I said something the next day to the crowd. I said, hey, when we debrief, could we focus less on the external and more on the internal? And I laid it out, and all the guys came up to me there and said, thank you. You talk about depression in men and this whole, you know, thing about toxic masculinity. It's like guys like Epstein. Yeah, that's toxic masculinity.
Absolutely.
But there's also toxic femininity that's never discussed. What about divine masculinity? And when you look at it, and you've seen, Jordan Peterson is like the genius of our time.
Oh, he's brilliant.
And I know some people don't like him. That's fine. Don't listen to him then. But when he makes points, they are backed by data. And he has a unique approach. And one of the things he talked about when he was doing an interview, and I know you've seen this clip where they're talking about toxic masculinity. And he's like, let me stop you right there. The fact that men are the ones that go to war. It's the preponderance of men who are killed at war. The preponderance of men that build things in construction. How often do you see a woman in construction? Men are incarcerated at a unproportional rate compared to women. Men are, you know, proportionally, you know, commit suicide compared to women. Right. Men carry all this weight, these expectations that women don't have.
Right.
Now, there's a flip side. For women have things that they shoulder, burdens that we don't have to contend with. And it's not a tit for tat. This is not a comparison. But men are not allowed to be as vulnerable or admit weakness as much as women.
Agreed.
That's sort of my opinion. And I don't want to paint in broad brushstrokes, but yeah, that's still, it's, I think we're coming around to vulnerability and how that is a masculine trait to a degree. But I think men are very insular with the burdens they carry on their shoulders, which leads to a high degree of depression, man. That's my opinion. I'd be interested in yours.
Oh, no. I think that, you know, there's a lot of resonance to what you say. I couldn't agree with you more about what that looks like as far as, you know, addressing the toxic femininity. You know, I want to tell you, I appreciate your transparency with telling me about your relationship. Going back to mine, I'm sure that there were some things that I did to contribute, you know, with her absence. I've done everything, you know, to even look back at those. I think the biggest challenge that I'd have, or that I'd say as far as what it looks like for men going through these positions, is our transparency about it, our vulnerability about it isn't accepted. It's still not very societally acceptable, you know, to be vulnerable. You know, think about the crying Jordan meme, okay? You know, the greatest basketball player that ever graced, right?
The GOAT.
The GOAT.
Yeah.
The crying Jordan meme. Mm. So this man, and when the meme came about was when he was crying over the passing of Kobe Bryant. So now we're making a meme at the greatest basketball player crying over the loss of his brother. And what other scopes would you see that, right? You know, women crying over loss of children, that's very acceptable, you know, different things like that. But as far as men being vulnerable, you know, Caleb Williams, the quarterback, there was a story with him and his mom embraced him, you know, and people are like, you know, crybaby, this, that, and like, come on, you know, it's men.
Dude, see, people can be so petty and so cruel.
100%.
It's the keyboard cowards.
It is. And you know, the thing that's so tough is that when you're reading those things, even myself included, you know, you're on steroids, you're this, you're that. Like, I said something about my kid, and it's like, what you never thought is probably because you're not a good dad. And like, these things from people that I don't know, you know, just me being vulnerable. And, you know, you're reading them from a person who doesn't have an avatar. There's no profile pic, and they're just words, but we allow them to resonate. You know what I mean? So that's the
struggle. Let me ask you this. Yeah. When you see those nasty quotes, mm-hmm. does that impact you?
Oh, man, you're human. You're human. 100%. I've gotten much better at fielding them, and a lot of people don't do a good enough job with controlling what's in their space. Like, you know, what is it? A perception is reality. Your perception is your reality. So what you perceive, you believe. So if you believe that everybody that you see is really succeeding and doing well on IG, then that's what your reality is. If your reality is that, like, hey, this is a place that I go and I, you know, I filter things through, great. If this is a place that you go where you're going to, you know, siphon good bits of information, put your own out there, that's it. It's just a tool, no different than any other tool out there. But you have to be aware of some of the pitfalls of that tool, you know?
And so I'm, you know, you asked the question about special operators, in my opinion. I try to be very careful about cutting no one down.
Yeah.
You know, hey, people's perception of you is of no consequence to you. I mean, that is usually a you problem. But let me ask you on the, how long have you been working out?
I started, my dad got me into it because I had a, you know, anxiety and anger issue. So literally eight.
So you've been lifting more or less?
No, lifting since eight. Like he got me a bench press and lifting. And everybody jokes about, you can't do that. It's going to stunt or retard your growth. Look at me. I'm 6 foot and 180 pounds. Do I look like it's retarded anything?
And you are fit. I can tell you're not on steroids. That is decades of.
Hold on. I want to be ITRT because of things that have happened in my life.
Your endocrine system.
Yes. But because you know what? If I don't put it out there, these keyboard warriors are scrutinized. No, that guy TRTs. I know he does. I know his clinician.
You're taking TRT to raise your testosterone level to normal levels. Is that correct? Okay. So, you know, the misnomer, and we have John on who's well-versed, as well as Dr. Kirk Parsley, who's...
Yes, sir.
Kirk Parsley is a genius. Except when we have Kirk on, I love Kirk. Kirk, he goes down the molecular level, and we're like, hey, dude, like, layman terms. Like,
right.
So what people don't understand is that if you were not to go on TRT, the amount of lifelong problems you'll have, one, you know, cardiac problems, heart problems, mm-hmm. You know, you'll start to put on obesity or fat, mm-hmm. That the effects of not being on TRT when you are low in testosterone has a much bigger impact on your longevity than just 100%. Going simply on it. Nobody wants to take shots.
Yep.
Don't. There's no one who ever in the world says, "Yeah, I love taking shots."
Right.
So,
There's nothing fun about it. It's a necessity. But you know, I think when I tell a lot of guys, I mean, a lot of the clients that I have when I'm taking out, because my focal is high performing individuals, ex football players, actors. I have producers. I have, you know, and so the biggest thing that I talk to them, you know, we basically just do assessment. I'm like, you know, I talk about their overall well-being, but have you had your levels checked?
That's the first thing Kirk does, who's not a doctor. Kirk does, as well as John. Hey, let's get a DEXA scan.
Yep.
And let's get your blood work done.
Yep.
Let's see where, you know, if you're not at normal levels, let's get you up to normal levels. That's because of the health benefits of having normal testosterone range rather than low testosterone.
Yep.
I mean, I'll tell you this. I remember this. They tested, finally, the Navy medicine or military medicine is catching up with the impacts of combat on the endocrine system, the cortisol, testosterone levels, mm-hmm. And how it you know, during combat, your cortisol goes up, your testosterone comes down.
Man.
But when you get back, it sort of regulates. But at a point, it just stops.
Right.
And cortisol will go up. So we took tests, and I had to be 36 or 35 at the time, and they're like, no, you're good. And then there was like a 29-year-old, and they're like, you need to go on testosterone. It just impacts the bodies differently in you don't know when somebody needs to go on testosterone. Somebody could be 60 before they have to go on testosterone. Right. And they're like, hey, we don't want to shut down your endocrine system. So I think the lack of education out there, but for somebody to just cut down decades of lifting and dedication is pointless. It's like, oh, you know what you should reply to those is like, hey, I'm sorry you're hurting.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you're hurting.
Right.
Because you've got to take shots at somebody you don't know.
Oh, man, I've seen it, you know, like, to your point, like, it is who hurt you is usually the response. Like, hey, those are some very hard words. And I don't think they're directed at me. So I guess what I'm going to ask you is, who hurt you? Who hurt you to make you say these hurtful things to me? You know what I mean? You know, like, one of my favorite, it was, after all my little challenges, I got really into Buddhism and just, you know, just the peaceful, you know, the understanding. But that thought, you know, Todd Nguyen, he says, what is it? No, it was, was it him? He talks about this guy who was cussing at him, you know, and he says to him, he's like, you know, he keeps on saying all these horrible words to him. You're this, you're not that, and whatever. You know, he says to him, he's like, hey, let me ask you something. If you give me a gift and I choose not to accept it, whose gift is it? He goes, well, I guess it's mine. If, you know, you choose not to accept my gift. He goes, just like that gift that you chose not to accept, I'm not accepting those harsh words from you, so they stay yours. I think a lot of us, you know, don't realize the importance of just letting that stuff lie. Like, yeah, I'm just not just taking that on, you know, like whether it be you need that to help you. You don't train hard. You're a cheater. You're this, you're that. I just let it go. I don't know who they're talking to. I just leave it there. Right. I don't take that on because I know everything that I worked on. I know all the hard work that I put into it. I laugh when I hear people, there's a few influencers out there, you know, they may be on gear. They may not. It doesn't matter to me, but it doesn't negate the hard work. When I hear cheater, to me, when I think of cheater, I think of a guy, like I think of a, you're in a class and you have all the answers, right? Whereas everybody's studied hard and you have all the answers. That took literally nothing for you to do, right? But you're saying some guy who's got an amazing physique cheated because he used something that you could also access. How? So did he not do the work? He just took the shot or took the pill and it made him the way he was? That's the biggest misnomer that I think isn't out there. Like, you know, again, you know, I'll be very vocal. Like I wrote for Muscle and Fitness, you know, way many moons back in the day, me as a young guy, man, I had those. I remember going to Mexico, you know, doing some of those things because I had baseball players. So I can talk about that to a large degree. That's not where I'm at now because, you know, you're I'm a more mature man. I'm not at that point. But, you know, all that stuff takes a large degree of work. Any of those guys, like, you know, you were talking about the MyFitPal and the macro tracking, to have the type of physique, to get your body to a certain point, the degree of minutiae and scrutiny you have to do about your diet, your exercise, everything is impeccable.
Would you consider yourself a disciplined person?
Yeah, yeah. Motivated? Not at all. Disciplined, incredibly, yeah.
Accountable. Self-accountable.
Yes, sir.
Let's, you know, we posted something. We've got some dietitians that write for the Everyday Warrior. Mm-hmm. The one yesterday or the day before, I can't recall, was about, you know, get your protein earlier, a protein packed breakfast. Oh, loved nothing, it. Nothing. And somebody, a urologist, actually made a great comment. And I responded. I'm like, hey, could you give us better guidance on this? He basically said, you know, the general rule of thumb is you want at least 1 gram of protein per lean muscle mass. Mm-hmm. 1 to 1.2. He said, yes, that's a good general rule of thumb for somebody who is relatively inactive. Mm-hmm. But for active males, they need a higher degree of protein grams per lean muscle mass. And he said, especially for aging men, 40, 50, 60, they need a higher percentage of protein. And I've asked him, and hopefully he'll reply. And you see right there, 0.8 grams is the minimum recommended. And this hit me because, you know, one, we had a great, she's gold. Dr. Gabrielle Lyon.
Gabrielle, yeah. I'm following her. Yeah.
Muscle-centric medicine, which she said, you know, muscle is the biggest organ in the body, and it's the key to longevity. Mm-hmm. What we all know is we age, it's harder to maintain that muscle mass. So where are you on grams of protein per lean muscle mass?
So I'm there. I'm a little bit higher. I'd say about 10 grams per body. But one thing that they also, we didn't talk about the advocacy, is intermittent fasting and where that comes into it. Because you talked about making sure that you try to get your protein in early and often. Where I'm at and where the challenge is that, eating in itself and the whole act of, you know, how we regimentally eat, is very foreign to me. You know, for a long time, I was that guy, you know, 3 to 4 times a day, but it's not functional for, you know, certain high performers. So I went back to like kind of the ancestral complex, right? Where, you know, we'd be back in the Paleolithic era. You had to, you know, forage. I think John talks about that too. Mm-hmm. All the activity and output that you had to do. That's why I told you my day starts with the activity and output. To me, the fasting is not only aesthetic, it's also cognitive. I find the longer I fast and the more I restrict my body, the more I feel my body, you know, more mind-muscle connection. I've gone into
48. You feel clarity in the mind.
Oh, man, yeah. But you have to get used to it. Initially, when I started intermittent fasting or caloric restriction, it was hard for me to function. You know, you think about it, like when you get wired or you get kind of connected to a certain pattern of eating or thinking, whatever that is once you have any deviations, it's a challenge, right? So think about all of us, you know, back in the day when I was in the car business, when 12 o'clock hit, I knew I had to eat. Like my body was telling me because of all this processing, all this, you know, constant repetition. So how do you function? That was not me dictating my wiring, that was societal wiring. So I had to reprogram it, you know, and that's more or less going back to primordial and ancestral living. Like I only want to eat when the activity is done, and you'll know because your body will truly be hungry once you get the output, right? Because then you have to put back the energy. And that's all that food is. I think, you know, a lot of us high performers, I don't look at food as, you know, as fun. It is just purposeful. It is just fuel.
When people can make that sort of paradigm, that thought paradigm shift, that food is merely a fuel source.
Man.
And I understand there's foodies. And who doesn't love to go to a great restaurant where, I mean, everything is in butter and it's just amazing. Right. It tastes amazing. We all want that. But for you, fasting, two things. If you're up at 3:30, how much sleep are you getting at night? What routine? I mean, are you going to bed at 8, 9?
Yep.
8?
Yep.
So we are the same way. We are 7:45, usually starting to get into bed. That may change with the child, but you're going to do our best to put
yes, sir.
That kid on a schedule.
That part. Yep.
So you're in bed at 8, up at 3:30. What is your fast period? I know you said, you yep. know, 3:30, you're working until, when do you have your first meal?
Noon to 1.
Noon to 1.
Yep.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Every day.
And then how many meals between noon and 8?
So that's where it's different. And I always try to make sure I explain this to people. When you're looking at caloric intake, it's not per, you know, at what point or what hour, it's per day. So if your consumption point is 3,000 calories per day.
If you get it all in one meal.
And again, a lot of people talk about that. But, you know, if you think about digestion as a process, it's a very laborious process. You know, the body has to sort, you know, break down, compartmentalize, whatever, mm-hmm. right? So you don't want to have your body doing that. The fastest state is the best state for the body to be in because it allows 100% recovery. Fed state is not always our best state. So you're allowing your body to recover for a longer period of time. It depends on certain times I have. Intermittently, I'll go to a 12 to 13-hour fast. And then every 2 weeks, biweekly, I'll go for a 72-hour fast.
And eating nothing?
Eating nothing. Just water, fats. So I get keto. I have MCT oil. You know, mm-hmm. because again, mm-hmm. I want to, mm-hmm. all I'm trying to do is bolster the efficacy of that synergy from my body being in that fastest state, sending all those neurochemicals and all that stuff to heighten my focus. When you're not like that, your body's like freaking out. What's going on? There's nothing, there's no fuel. So then your brain has to kick into overdrive. You feel everything. You're connected to everything.
So, okay. You said every 2 weeks you'll do a
72-hour fast.
Mm-hmm. Water. Are you putting the MCT oil in the water?
MCT oil will be my coffee, my morning coffee.
So yeah. you are still having caffeine?
Yep.
Okay. Specific type of coffee?
Any type of coffee. I usually have black. I'm lactose intolerant, so I'll use an oat milk or creamer, but that, and I'll have an MCT oil.
Coffee, water for 72 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found in terms of body fat percentage that the fasting has allowed you to maintain a lower... What are you at body fat?
And I'll be more than happy to give anybody my scan. I'll pull it up. I'm 3.4 or 4. I might be 4. I don't know what now, but I'm like
3%. I was seeing the pictures, dude.
Yeah. I mean, but a lot of people say, they're like, no, there's no way. You're 44 years old. I don't believe you. I think that's, you know, photo manipulation or your whatever. So I'll do a DEXA scan if they want me to.
We do edit my photos. Occasionally we put hair on me. Yeah. But I've also heard... And again, there's so many misnomers out there. There's so much bad information that maintaining such a low body fat can actually be unhealthy.
Okay. Well, David Sinclair and some of these people, David Sinclair, I don't know if you've seen his book. He's also been a Rogan. He's a big proponent of anti-aging. He does a lot of research on people in green zones and all that.
Yes. Yes.
People live, you found that they live on restrictive caloric diets. They're very small people, you know, so he talks about that. That to me is very much a misnomer, you know. I've been like this, anybody you ask, I've been like this as long as I can remember. I don't know a time in my life that I've ever been 10%, 11%, I think when I was really alcoholic, but this is how I've always been, you know.
Are you taking DEXAs? for the accident. So how often are you taking Dexas?
I need to get another one. I like, you know, we talk about how when you're in your routine, the first thing that starts to falter is your fitness. So I need to get my scans again and certain things that I need to do. But I'll probably, I just passed that ISSA certification.
Congratulations.
They're doing a big thing on me. So I am going to do a DEXA scan on my video with them and all that, have the results and all that so people can see. You know,
hey, just shut people up a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll is on day two. He just had his DEXA scans done. We're going to get him into it.
Good.
I'm like, bro, because he hasn't traditionally been in weightlifting or been on a program. We all know periodization and programming are everything.
Okay.
He's going to throw muscle on. He's going to cut fat. I'm like, just watch. But you've got to stick with it for 30, 60 days. When you see those results, there'll be a little bit of an addiction. You'd be like, you know, more.
Man,
more.
You know what I tell people? You know, the biggest thing about, you know, once you look good and you feel good, it becomes this perpetual loop, you know, like, cause then you start working out, you start training. It's the validation feedback loop. People will be like, oh, hey man, you look really good. Really? So you got validation, feedback, then you start training, you get it again. So it keeps on looping that perpetual cycle, you know, like as a, you know, being in the gym world, I see a lot of competitors. They'll get ready for a show. You'll see everything through prep and you'll see people watching them. Then once they get to their shape, people are like, oh my God, you look awesome. You see that person really struggling to go back to normalcy, going back to that because of all the validation they got. And here's the thing. When you're looking at me, you're not saying, man, that guy lifts 315 pounds. That guy lifts, you know, he probably curls. You're looking at me and you're saying, oh, he's got to be disciplined. Like that guy probably doesn't. That is the biggest thing that as a celebrity trainer, I tell my guys, I said, yo, your appearance speaks to people before you ever do. You know, like there's a large degree of respect that I command before I even speak. I mean, I may not know anything about training, right? I may not know anything about anything. I may be a bad person, but off rip, you're going to look at me and there's an aesthetic degree of respect you're going to have because this guy is committed. This guy, you know, looks like he, you know, is the part. So that's what I always tell people. Health is the new wealth. There's millionaires that I know that don't have the money to get themselves back in line. You know, the disconnect to me is this, right? We have financial planners. If you and I were going and we're talking about finance, you've heard me say this. And I said, well, look, you know, right now my finances aren't that good. I'm bankrupt, but I used to be amazing. You wouldn't listen to me. You go, you know, whatever. But in fitness, we got all these terminologies, body positive, all this. And again, I'm going to get blasted for this, but
I'm with you.
Personal trainer is a blatant disconnect for me because again, as much as you may know everything, you may be brighter than me. You're not applying the data.
So we've talked about this before, and you see it in the traditional mainstream gyms like Gold's or 24 Hour Fitness, where you're like, hey, if you can't live what you preach, then you're defeated before you even start. I mean, it just, if I'm going to find somebody to train with, it's going to be somebody that looks like you. It's going to be somebody that I know, John. You know, I mean, with his knowledge, and he performed at a level. And that guy's, I mean, he's taking damage. It kills me. And what do you say to people? Well, he's so vain. Like, oh, that's not vanity.
Yeah,
he's at peak condition. Mm-hmm. Guarantee he has a lot less health problems than anyone else.
But you know, I guess my response to them is, what's wrong with that? You know, I do a lot of hard work. I care about myself. Why should I?
How I present.
I go to a lot of them and I say, why don't you care enough about yourself to do the same? You know, we only have one life. You know, and again, a lot of these people, you know, walk around, you know, thinking, living in their body like it's, you know, they're going to get another one, you know. And I think that was the thing that I didn't really put in context early on. Like, yo, this whole body you have, you got to treat this thing right. You know, because at some point it will give on you, will do all these things. And, you know, seeing a lot of older people that haven't made those concessions. So, you know, with those people that are out there thinking that, you know, there's always a time that they can change. There's always whatever. There really isn't. You know, there's no better time than the present. And none of us know what tomorrow brings. You know, none of us do. I can definitely tell you one of the largest drivers to why I stay so committed is there's so many things in life that I want to do. When I was addicted for 7 years in what I call a coma, I sat on a couch, I popped pills, I couldn't move, I couldn't do anything. I couldn't do anything with my daughter. I couldn't do anything with my lady. I had so much brain fog from the drinking and the pills. Mm. If I did train, it took me 4 days just to recover because of all the drinking. My body wasn't able to metabolize anything. Right now at 44, I haven't had a drink in 7 years. I haven't popped a pill in 8. this is the best that I've felt. I felt better now at 44 than I did at 20 in my 20s. Mm. And I show you pictures side by side. I look better than I did now. You know what I mean? So, you know, to me, you know, I want to, you know, get everything out of this life. I never want to be inhibited. You know, if there's something like, you know, I saw you do the sevens, I want to do that. Again, I'm fearful of what is expected, but I still want to have the physical capability to be able to do it. I don't want any of those restrictions. You know, one of my good friends, he had a kid just recently, and he can't do anything. He's physically unable. And I'm like, to me, and I keep on preaching, I'm like, man, stop, you're missing so much. I'm willing to train this guy for free just because as a father, I know what, you know, what happens. I know how much joy I had with my daughter, you know, like when she was early on, being able to pick her up and do all these things. So, yeah.
Let's talk about, well, first off, thank you for sending these out to both my wife. Amorpho,
yes,
which is a weighted vest. And when you said these are guys who are from Nike.
Nike
is such a pedigree of, they just, with their products and people that come out of Nike, it seems like they're like wildly successful. There's something about the magic sauce over there. But talk to me about how this relationship formed, the vest itself, where you're going with the company, and why you're such a advocate.
Man, thank you. So what happened with Amorpho? Amorpho was a bunch of Nike guys. There's all of Nike's head of design, their CEO, all their leadership. And what happened was, you know, Nike's a very big company, big entity. They, especially, they handled a lot of the performance and the talent section. So they started working on different things they thought were going to add benefit, you know, to training, you know, other than shoes. And they saw some weighted vests out there. The lady that does their R&D and a lot of the science behind it, they're brilliant people, but they're like, you know, it's not functional. And even if it, even right now with the current, you know, paradigm we have with the weightlifting and materials, it's just going the wrong way. You know, nobody wants to use it and it doesn't, it's not helpful. So Amorpho with Nike came out with the design. The design is sleek. I mean, all the aesthetics of it, I mean, you look like a superhero, but it's not only, you know, visually stunning, it's also, you know, functionally, you know, appropriate. So the microload technology and how it works is it's subtle distribution over the, you know, the certain points of the body. When I put this guy on here, the way it works is it's contoured. It's contoured your body. You pull these straps, then it sucks on there. So you're not being inhibited. You're not losing any mobility. The whole system in itself weighs, if you grab the shirt, the pants, and the vest, I think it's like 13 pounds. But just a subtle increase of load is going to increase your lactic tolerance, your ability to remove lactate. So when you're doing these endurance intervals and your body starts to lock up, that's lactate. You know,
well, think about it. That's 13 pounds with each step you take. It increases the load. So even if somebody is walking, they throw one of these on, the work capacity increases exponentially.
Just by walking. And again, it's simplicity. You know, like they made them very stylish. You know, the whole thing about it is it should be something that you can do on your day-to-day. So I'm here on the podcast wearing my vest, and just this in alone, you know, is helping me burn calories. My NEAT score, you know, your non...
Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
Non-exercise activity thermogenesis is what NEAT is. So you see a lot of lean people and how they're lean. They're always fidgeting or doing things. That's thermogenic activity. Like even me sitting here just moving around, I'm burning calories.
And you said you'll wear this throughout the workout, whether it's back, just traditional, you know, cable rows. You're wearing this thing.
Everything.
Bench press.
Everything.
Feels great.
Bench press, so like a chest day, I'll do my bench. I'll do all that. And I have videos where I'm wearing it. And you see that? Then I'll go over and I'll jump and I'll do a bunch of dips as well. So I'll get that in my superset. I literally do, you know, incline bench press, go over and do dips, back and forth.
Will, you're going to have to take the woman's small. You knew that was coming. You knew that was coming. We'll get you one. That's Jordan's. She's already claimed it. I mean, this is, it just looks like an amazing product. And again.
So to show you how well the product's taking traction, Amorpho, you guys did awesome. They just got, they're in all of Dick's Sporting Goods. They got a national contract with Dick's, right? Half of the NFL has them. All of, I think they're solidifying the MHL, the baseball contract.
MLB.
MLB, sorry. Okay. NHL, they have. They have, I think, a fair percentage of NHL guys. And I'm excited because they just went over to my my home, which is USATF, track and field. So a lot of athletes, Michael Johnson, you know, the GOAT, he has picked it up for his performance center.
God, that's a name I have not heard in a while.
Get out of here, man. You're Texas. You can't say, you cannot be a Texan and but, not know who Michael Johnson is.
I know who he is. I mean, the Golden Shoes.
Yes.
I mean, he was just, yeah.
Yes. My, yeah.
Man, USA.
Yes.
USA.
Man, he's such a dog. I love Mike. But yeah, we got a lot of great names that behind the brand, a lot of great football players and all that. So, you know, when you have professional athletes that get behind it, you know, it says something about the process itself.
Well, I mean, the weighted vest industry is not new. I think where this, and I'm not tied to the company whatsoever, where I think this excels is most weighted vests are traditional tactical 100%. Vest, you throw the plates in it.
Yes.
Can you do bench press in a traditional tactical vest? Yes, but if you ever feel where the plate stops on your back, you can feel it. When we threw those on, you're not all that maneuverable. And no. they've gotten more high speed, but the fact that they put the thought into the design of this not restricting other actions is pretty smart.
Well, running resistance running is a huge thing, and how are you going to do it? You know, like it, back in my day when we were running and training, we used to throw leg weights on, and you do that, it puts so much torque and strain on your joints. You know, so like this is the evolution. You know, and I wish I would have had this. I remember going through. Do you remember the calf shoes? We had those. Do you remember those, the jumping shoes?
That was like the 90s in high school. With the guy, like with the basketball players walking those. Yeah. Do they still have those?
You know what? I was on eBay looking for them because you remember the gimmick behind that was you spin all your resting weight on your heels. So if that was, you know, traversed to your calves, you'd be able to jump out of the gym. But I don't know. I don't know if I got all the benefit from that. I just know that there's so many things. I know the company before this that I went, I'm not going to say that I don't want to bash them, but they were also, you know, weighted vest, but I didn't find them to be very ergonomic. I felt like them to be too heavy. And then when you started running, you had too much front load. It would move around. This guy doesn't move around. Like it literally feels like it's on your body. You know what I mean?
Wait, let me ask you this. So you said 13 pounds.
Yeah.
13 pounds?
10. Yeah.
Can you get higher than 13 or what was the method or design behind 13? Did they find that to be just the perfect sort of...
A lot of nuance, a lot of science behind it. Mm-hmm. They were trying to go push it to the point to know a biomechanical breakdown. Like, so when... And I'm trying to think of the test, and I'll have to see if I can get you the site, but what test they were trying to conduct, and they weren't trying to lose any of performance value. So I think that they were trying to push the threshold of where we can go and not inhibit performance.
Yes.
So the rest of the suit does come with other components. Like there's a long sleeve shirt that is a weighted shirt.
I saw that, as well as pants.
And their pants. So
that actually distribute the weight rather than putting the weight on the ankle. Yeah.
Exactly. So as a runner like Ken, or you know, performance athlete, you and myself, if you were doing that, just a little added load, you know, you notice it. You notice it when it comes off more so than when it's on.
On race day.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Man. And that's
when you hit the football field or baseball or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. Well, dude, I mean, did they contact you or how did that relationship?
So how that worked is funny. I was on LinkedIn and I saw a post and I want to say something like may have been like that. It was more or less just kind of anecdotal.
Yes.
And so LinkedIn, and people don't realize this, that's where the decision makers are. So if you're an influencer, quote unquote, and you want to connect with the brand, you're not going to go on IG. IG is not going to have anybody you have access to. The decision makers are all made.
Oh, LinkedIn is the hunting ground. Trust me. IG, yes, and for multiple reasons.
I went and I found the COO. I want to know who the chief operating officer is, right? I want to know who's making decisions, and I wanted to propose to him. I said, hey, I've been a Nike model from the time I can remember. I would always go to Nike and do shoots. Their casting, whenever they do, if you see all these guys that are on there, those are all models from Sports Unlimited, except for that guy. That's DeMario Thomas.
Yeah, yes.
Right? But all these, for the most part, are, you know, models from Sports Unlimited, my agency. So I said, hey, guess what?
I'm with, yes.
You don't even have to use them.
And I got your product.
And I said, not only that, what I want to do is I want to start disseminating information about your product on LinkedIn and other platforms. I'm a fit over 40, you know, Flint and the Sinister, you know, celebrity coach. And I think this would have tremendous value, right? So that's it. And I absolutely love the aesthetic.
The tights are very interesting.
Oh man, I love them.
How much weight
in this? So they're 1 pound for the women, and the guys is, I think it's about 1.6, 1.4.
And to anyone listening to this, they'd probably be like, that's not much weight, but you can feel it.
You can, it's definitely noticeable. It's noticeable, but it's not restrictive. Like, you can move, but you're like, yeah, I feel this.
And you feel fatigue.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it is, I mean, it's really nice. It almost feels like a second skin. Mm. Yeah. So anybody looking at it, I would definitely encourage it. You'll notice the impact of your performance. I'd say, you know, if you use it, like very, you know, consistently for about 2 weeks, you'll notice it afterwards.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, dude, what's next for you? Just continuing to build this business?
Yes. I have a book coming out where more or less, you know, I talk about this, the suicide survivor. You know, I'm writing my book, you know, talked about, I've, you know, struggled with suicide and, you know, almost contemplating it more times than I want to talk about, but it's like what I did. You know, I think when you have, you know, mental health dis-ease, it's always a thing. It's a dis-ease that you have. You always fight it. But what did I do? You know, my suicide survived. What did I do to get myself out of that? And just the framework. Like, I'm not an amazing guy. I'm just a guy, you know, but there's going to be an amazing guy who's going to pick up that manual, and he's going to, you know, be lost along the way, and he's going to get him back.
So when I put out the both books, there's always this, like, like you're putting yourself out there. Do you have that feeling at all?
You know what? I did. And then I read The Everyday Warrior. Like, the probably, like, no, and again, you know, not trying to, you know, because I know how you're very humble, but it was so big for me because it literally gave me, I've been struggling, man. Like, I've been a very high performer, but like, now I've done so many things. I'm like, where do I go now? Mm. So I read a book from, you know, a 10-year operator, right, that had some similar struggles, and he was very directed at it. And he was very common assessment. He also talked about the fact that it's a natural part of the thing, and nobody ever told me, like, I got to fail. So it's okay to fail, and you talk about that. So it was it really what made me do everything. I reached out to ISSA. I, you know, started writing the book. I got the framework. So now I just got to put everything in order. That's why this was important to me, Mike.
Good. Well, it's going to impact a lot of lives. I'll tell you what, when you were ready to release that, because books release on Tuesday, we'll have you back on the content. Send me a pre-copy.
Yes, sir.
At least a month or two in advance so I can read through it. We'll have you back on, and we'll help promote that book. But we'll dissect it to the point where, even when you dissect a book on a podcast, you're still not, it's not the same as reading the book because the amount of detail. We can only talk about so much in an hour. So when that book is ready to come out, let me know. We'll have you back on the podcast. Yes, sir. Where can people best find you? Do you have your own personal website?
I, you know, don't have a website yet.
Well, you're going to have to get that done for the book.
I have to get that done for the book. So I guess IG, mm-hmm. LinkedIn, Facebook. So
what's your handle on
On Instagram. IG, it's Charles_J_Flanagan. You know, my moniker is Professor X, but I'll be changing that.
We'll put that out. Go follow this guy. Amazing story. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to fly out from Arizona for this podcast, man.
I would do it all amazing. Over again.
And I look forward to reading this book, especially with the amount of vulnerability you're going to share with people, which is brave. That is bravery, and that is courage personified. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. And for everyone else, appreciate joining the Men's Journal podcast. Again, remember, go to whatever platform you listen to, leave a review. It helps us out. That's how we learn. Unless you're going to be a total raging, you know what, then keep it to yourself. Perfect. All right, guys. Thanks for joining us. Out here.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.